ABC AFL Daily is the best conversation in footy. Hosted by Corbin Middlemass and Ben Cameron, alongside regulars like Mick Malthouse.
I mean, I don't remember too many games, but it's one of the ones I remembered. It was just that physical.
Bob Murphy.
Where do you guys get off thinking you can pick and choose?
And more, it keeps you in the loop with the biggest stories in the AFL and the number one analysis in the game. ABC AFL Daily, 5 eps a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The FIFA World Cup has actually stopped for a second to take a breath, so we thought we'd give you something different today. You have probably seen Kevin Prince-Boateng on the SBS coverage, and you've probably noticed that he's the best-dressed pundit in Australian sport right now, and you've definitely noticed that he's a great chat. This is a guy, after all, who has played for AC Milan, Barcelona. He's been in the Premier League and the Bundesliga too. He's represented Germany and Ghana. Now, he lives in Australia. And we wanted to talk to him, get his views on football and plenty more. He didn't disappoint. I'm Patrick Stack. This is ABC Sport Daily World Cup Special. The SBS World Cup coverage has had that much love in the last month. I dare say they're almost getting tired of the amount of affection coming their way. And a big part of that is this man, Kevin Prince-Boateng, a guy who once played at the highest levels across the world, who's played in a World Cup for Ghana. So good to talk a little bit of football with him today. Kevin, welcome.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me and thank you for having me.
It's been such a welcome surprise to see you on the SBS coverage during the World Cup. And I think many people would be surprised to learn you live in Australia. How long have you been here and what brought you down under?
It's almost been 3 years now. The first time I came to Australia was 2023 for the Women's World Cup. I was invited by the FIFA. Fell in love with my wife, fell in love with this country, with the people here. I found God, so I was like, this is my sacred, my holy land. I'm never going to leave again.
Well, it's been fantastic having you here. I understand that you're coaching here. Like, how are you finding the community here, the sense of football culture? I imagine very, very different to places where you've spent the bulk of your life.
It's very different. It's still, I think there's a big margin of improvement because there is the quality. We just have to go and find it. We have to go and find it. And I always say we, because I feel home here already. We have to dig into the grassroots to find the real talent and to make Australia a nation what is going to be longer on the map than just every 4 years at the World Cup. But I can see there's a lot of love for the sport, especially now in the moment when the World Cup is on and how the Socceroos were followed by the fans. So we need to build on that.
You're still a relatively young man. I just wonder, are you still playing here, even at a social level?
Sometimes I kick the ball with some friends, but no, not really. I'd rather play paddle.
Okay. It's been, as I say, great watching you and the entire SBS team on TV, but I've heard a rumor you don't actually watch that much TV. Is it true that you only got a television because your father-in-law wanted to watch this World Cup tournament?
So there's two reasons. We don't normally have a TV at home. We don't really watch TV. If I watch sports, I only watch highlights of basketball because my favorite sport. My mom came over for the birth of my son. So I bought a television for her because she mostly falls asleep with the television. And then I thought, you know what, let's keep this television because my father-in-law can watch the World Cup and he wanted to watch some games with me. So he gets the expertise straight from me, not in the studio. But then, yeah, the SBS came around and now I'm not even at home watching the games on my television.
It's been just the most incredible tournament. I think, you know, you've probably spent a large portion of it very much sleep deprived. I've really enjoyed the continued rise of the African nations. To see 9 out of 10 into the knockout stages was something else. Why do you think we're seeing the continent of Africa just going from strength to strength to strength?
Because the quality and the talent of African players is undeniable. The physics, the strength, and now we're bringing in foreign coaches who bring in a different aspect of the tactical way of playing. And we can see that they're all coming into the tournament. A lot of African nations qualified, but then there's a moment where we stopped. And this is the moment where the Africans have to wake up and say, hey, we need another step in the right directions. We need to bring the flair and the game and the passion we have over 90 minutes, over 120 minutes, because it's not enough on these. If you come to the semis or quarterfinals, it's not enough anymore to play only 60 minutes good. So we just saw it with Egypt. They played an unbelievable game to a certain point, and then they just drift off. And this is what the Africans, is the next step in the next direction, where then finally we maybe can see an African team winning the World Cup.
I'm intrigued to see how you would, I guess, mark the African experience at this World Cup in particular. We're down to, as you say, 8 teams remaining the quarterfinal stage. Morocco is the ones carrying the flag right now, or the carrying, I guess, the mantle for Africa. Do you feel as though they've, you know, reached a sort of pass mark? They've overachieved. They're underachieved as a sort of group. What do you think?
And we underachieved. As an African continent, we underachieved, because if you have eight countries who qualify and we have only one team now who's still in the tournament, that's not enough. So this is what I mean. We have to take an example at Morocco, because Morocco is playing a great football over 90 minutes, over 120 minutes. They're very difficult to beat because they're playing as a unit. And I spoke about that in the show as well. It's about the team spirit. You have to build a team spirit, and not only talking about, it's like a family. No, become like a family. Because the hardest thing in the national team is building that team spirit, because you only meet every 2 months. And you meet a month before going into the World Cup. But that's the tricky part. And that's where you have to elevate the next step, that the African teams go much further in the tournaments.
There is so much baked into that clash between Morocco and France. It's absolutely mouthwatering and mind-blowing to see them playing at a World Cup. And I just feel like the storylines are so intense. How are you seeing that matchup? And can you see Morocco causing an enormous upset there?
Yes. And it's not even a surprise. It's not going to be a shock. It's not going to be a big upset if Morocco maybe beats France. Of course, we see in France on every position there's a world-class player. But we see in the Moroccan team they have some superstars, but the biggest superstar is their team. The biggest superstar is how they play together and how they fight for each other. And there's not a lot of teams where we have that great team spirit in this tournament as we've seen in Morocco. So they can beat France. They can move on. I see Morocco even going all the way. They could go to the final. It's just important that they do it over the whole 90 minutes and that the team spirit stays up.
What's so interesting, I think, about football, almost more so than any other sport in the world, is the way that the participants often straddle multiple cultures, multiple nations. You're someone who's represented Germany, but you ultimately also decided to represent Ghana at a Football World Cup. And it's kind of a similar storyline in some ways to Christian Volpato and what we saw with the Socceroos. Can you just talk to me about how you made that decision, how difficult it is to sort of straddle those two worlds, or maybe it's a supremely positive experience?
Not for me, it was very positive, because I took the best of both sides. I was intelligent enough to pick the right moments and the right sides. Like, I'm very, punctuality is very important to me. Organization is very important to me. That's my German side. But on the field, I would have maybe a little bit too much temper and too much flair and fire of the Ghanaians, but I try to mix it in the best way. And I see the same in Volpato. He has the athleticism, the strength of an Australian, but the football intelligence comes from the European side.
And you can see with the changes that have come on, Volpato's desperate and wants to impress and wanting the ball, being brave with the ball. And we look better when we do that.
It's just the decision was at the end easy for me to make, because my path and the Germany national team path, they were different paths. And the path of the door opens to play for the Ghana Black Stars. And it was just the right call for me. And just going back even to my grassroots, to where I'm coming from, I didn't know that side from Ghana. So it was for me the perfect moment. And bringing these worlds together and these cultures, that's the most exciting thing, but it's still a challenge.
Tell me about the change rooms and how they differ from Germany to Ghana.
Germany, very organized. You sit down, you have your headphones, and you focus on the game. The coach will maybe speak a little bit, and it's very quiet. Maybe you have a little bit of music. Now the new generation, they have music in their dressing room. But when I grew up, there was no music. The culture shock, I come to Ghana and there's drums and there's live music and everybody's singing and dancing, and even the coaches, the physiotherapists. Everybody's dancing and praising God and singing and doing all of this stuff. So it was for me even to understand the different culture, because I was very serious. I was always in a tunnel, focusing on the game. So I had to let loose a little bit. So completely two different worlds.
Am I correct in saying that you played against your own brother when Ghana played Germany at a Football World Cup?
We made history.
That is crazy. Like, tell me, what's the thing you remember from that experience?
I remember it like it was yesterday because it was a very special occasion. It's two brothers playing for two nations against each other. It was never happened before. We made history. The biggest thing was that in that moment, we didn't even have contact. We had a big fallout, me and my brother, even in the press. It was not just between us. It was everywhere in the press. So, of course, the press made a bigger story around this, saying the two brothers who don't talk to each other playing against each other. So it was a full-on story. It was a full-on game. And yeah, I remember the night before I couldn't go to sleep because there were so many scenarios in my head what could happen. And yeah, I wasn't that time even the most hated person in Germany because I fouled Michael Ballack, so he couldn't play the World Cup. It was just a roller coaster of emotions. But looking back, it was crazy story to tell and to talk about.
That's intense to consider that you felt like you were the most hated man in one of the biggest nations on earth. Like, how tough was that?
It was really tough. Leading up to the World Cup, I was even thinking about retiring because it was heavy. You know how easy it is today to use social media and say things and hurt people or you say hurtful things. So it was not an easy situation for me. But what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And I came back. I played a great World Cup. And then out of that situation, kind of my career started moving because then I went to Milan. And my career started to bloom, I would say.
You're someone, as you say, who has played in Italy, England, Germany. You know, like, you've got a rare global understanding, I would say, of football. And when you look at this tournament, which is, you know, the World Cup, it's as global as it gets. It's been a tournament for the stars. I just wonder how you feel the world order is shifting from an individual, biggest names in the world right now from what we're seeing. Because it's kind of fascinating to see people like Messi coming to the end, Haaland stamping his foot on things, Mbappe obviously doing incredible things as well. Like, how are you seeing that pecking order?
It's a new generation coming in. It's very clear to see. It's never been this clear like this World Cup. Like Modric, Ronaldo, Neymar, these are the world class stars, the old wine. They're coming to an end. It's done. The international career is done. The normal club football time will be over soon. And the new guys are stepping in. Names of Haaland, Mbappe, they're coming in and they're taking over. They're taking the spaces and they will break all the records. These guys will come out and break the records because Haaland and Mbappe, they're already on these tracks of breaking these records. But it's just normal. I'm just happy and glad that we have no gap in between, that there's not a five-year gap, that we are waiting for new phenomenal players to come through. Messi's going to stop soon. He's still in the tournament. We know it's his last tournament. So the next World Cup will be the big stage for Haaland, Mbappe, Vinicius Junior, and there's going to come new players, Ashraf Hakimi, and there's going to come new superstars. So I'm just glad that football doesn't have a gap and we don't have to wait.
I'm intrigued to know how you view the Socceroos. If we're thinking, talking about nations who are just getting some young talent through the door but are now sort of thinking about another World Cup in 4 years' time in Morocco, Spain, Portugal. What's the key to them evolving and taking themselves to a position where they can win a knockout game, even go deeper into a tournament?
Look, there's a lot of talk, of course, in this country about the Socceroos, and I think a lot of it is very softened. Nobody's really going direct to the point. Everybody's like, but it was okay. It was not okay. If that's the target, to just qualify and play that kind of football, I get it. But then people will not be excited to watch the games. There was no entertainment. And you can't, on a longer span, okay, once every 4 years, you get people on the television. But I want people on the television every single day. So you have to start to excite people. And how do you excite people? And by playing the best players and by playing exciting and entertaining football. And that's not the case. So either if it's you have to change the coach or you change the whole team. So, but something has to happen. And I live here since 3 years. It's not that I'm just coming in here and saying things. I love football. Football is my life. I see football and I know what is good and what is not good. That was the game against Turkey. Great. I loved it because it means you're an adult football team, a mature football team who can defend over 90 minutes like that. But the rest of it, you played against teams you could beat, but you didn't even fight. And that's the thing. If you don't do three passes in a row and you're okay with just defending for 90 minutes, that's not entertaining football. That's not going to get the kids off their couch, off their sofas and say, hey, I want to be like this guy. I want to play for the Socceroos. That's why they rather go and play rugby. Because it's more entertaining, there's more views, but the views will come with entertainment and exciting football, and that's what we need in this country. And we have the players, Iran Kunde, Touré, Volpato, the players are there. Beach, unbelievable goalkeeper.
Delivered well.
But if you only defend, you will rob them of all their powers. We need to get out there, play a 4-3-3, go aggressive, challenge the Americans, because the Americans are not a bigger football nation than Australia is. We can't defend against the Americans. We go and challenge them, and we give them some fireworks. That's how I see it. So if I would be the coach, I would come out and play my best players every single game.
I like the cause for optimism that you're talking to me about there, Gavin. Let's just finally hit the remainder of this tournament. I think it's fair to say France, head and shoulders, probably above everyone else right now. Who would you see as the team most likely that can knock them off?
As the table is going, France, England, what France will win. But in a final game, anything can happen. So it's very difficult to say, especially we see games like today. Egypt nearly beat Argentina, so everything can happen. It was never this close with the small countries, so-called small countries, can be a big upset. That's why Morocco could go all the way. But my favorite final would be England-France, France winning, having a good game in the last World Cup.
It's been a cracking tournament. We've still got plenty more to go. We're just getting to the pointy end. Kevin, thanks so much for your time, mate. You've been really generous. I'm sure you're exhausted.
Thank you so much. And God bless you. Talk to you soon.
Thanks to Kevin Prince-Boateng for that. We will be back after the France-Morocco quarterfinal Friday morning. It's heating up. I'm Patrick Stack. This was ABC Sport Daily, World Cup special produced by Poppy Penny. Thanks to SBS and the Black Stars of Ghana for the extra audio used in this episode.